Off the Ball, GAA.
They lied to us, telling us that we would have a pitch, and then they lied to us about saying that they'd line it out and to try and keep us there. They try to keep us there on the false pretenses, like, and you'd be very disappointed in that. Like.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Green Scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of The Green Scene, your one-stop shop for all things Irish football. I am back in the studio for the first time since Czechia. It always comes back to Prague, doesn't it? I went seeking some hope with Andy Reid a couple of weeks ago as he looks to improve the future of Irish football with his new TY course before heading to Kieran McGeaney's favourite place, Carton House. I mean, the less said about that, the better. But while I was there, I got to talk to Brian Mbeumo and I asked him about Keith Andrews and Nathan Collins, who we'll have a little bit of a chat around later on as they continue their push for Europe. I'm joined in studio by David Wilson, who is delighted to get a taste of what we can expect to see in Croke Park come August on Monday night, as his beloved Man United were outfought by a valiant Leeds United side.
It was a tough watch, but like, I don't want to think about Man United now. I want to just think about only things Irish football. And it's been a pretty good week, all things Ireland concerned.
Yeah.
Hell of a win yesterday for Carlo Ward's Irish team in Poland. And our roving reporter now is Ben Symes.
Yeah, I've been demoted back to the
studio.
You're
never demoted.
And Ben has been promoted to roving reporter. And he's currently, I think he's on his way back from Poland.
He's taken a roundabout route from what I've heard. So
yeah.
He's
taken a leaf out of my book.
Yeah. He saw the trip to Wroclaw via Newcastle and then the train to Prague, and he thought, I'm going to go one
That's
better.
That's a bit of me. So we'll catch up with Ben in a couple of minutes and we'll dive into that win over Poland last night, a crucial win over Poland. And of course, you can tune into Koi Gig at some stage later on this week or into next week as they prepare for, later on this week, they've got the game on Saturday, obviously. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see where we're at as regards World Cup qualification. Obviously, we'll have a playoff to look forward to regardless on the women's side of things. But yesterday on Off the Ball Breakfast, we were lucky enough to be joined by a certain Harvey Vale, Republic of Ireland international now. He's made two appearances. He came off the bench in that game against Czechia, of course, and then came off the bench again against North Macedonia a few days later. And it was great to chat to him yesterday. I don't know how much you've seen of him outside of those kind of cameos in Prague and in Dublin, but I think that cameo in Dublin certainly caught the attention of a few Irish fans, a few nice touches, taking a couple of set pieces.
In particular, there was the move that I think, was it Johnny Kenny nearly got in behind?
Yeah.
It was a great ball. I think Boston Lowell played maybe a good ball into his feet, or maybe he laid it off to Boston Lowell.
We got a free kick out of it, I think.
Yeah. He played a lovely, it was a great first touch. You can see he's got lots of quality and at the weekend, or sorry, for QPR, his club, like, he is tasked with being their creative output, kind of coming in off the left. So, an exciting time for him to be in the squad, an exciting time for Irish football fans as well to have this Chelsea Academy product come into the squad. He's definitely one for the future, but also for one for now and for hopefully the Nations League games in the autumn.
Yeah, and we've a couple of clips to play here from that chat yesterday. Obviously, Harvey is English born. He's some Irish kind of roots. And in this clip, you're going to hear exactly how he went from lifting a European Under-19 Championship title with England as the captain to making his debut for Ireland in Prague.
I think maybe I made one block in the game, so my second touch for Ireland would have been a penalty in the biggest game in the last 10 years.
First off, when did you realise you were qualified?
I think it was around COVID time. I was probably maybe 16 or 17. I applied for my citizenship. Took me about 18 months, maybe 2 years to get it. Joined QPR and then started speaking to the Ireland manager and, it sort of went from there, really.
Tell us a bit about your grandfather. Where exactly is he from? Because different parts of Kerry are claiming him.
I think he said he was born in Kenmare and grew up in Sneem, so he can claim a bit of both of him, yeah. I think every time I saw him, he mentioned it probably. So yeah, he's super proud, yeah.
The conversation starts, so Glenn Whelan also, I think, at some point.
Yeah, Bristol Rovers, yeah. Yeah, I had quite a few conversations with him about it. He was the same. He was always telling me, like, it's a great opportunity for me, and I didn't have my citizenship at the time, I don't think. But that's sort of when the ball started rolling, I guess, around that time.
At QPR, by this stage, you have your passport. Is it Jimmy Dunn winding you up saying, come on, Or is it the fact that Hamer arrives and starts talking to Jimmy Dunn one day? How does that work?
A bit of both, probably. I think Jim, when I signed, probably put a good word in for me. And then I spoke to the gaffer sort of start of the season, and he was saying he'll be watching me and everything. And he obviously thinks my performances warranted a call up. So Jim was like a proud dad, I think.
And from there, getting in the squad to coming off the bench in like the biggest game that we've had in about 10 years.
It was something probably I didn't expect, but I was prepared for. It happens, you know, obviously Sammy came on and went off sort of straight away, and the gaffers looked to me and asked me to come on and said sort of, this could be a massive moment for you. It was definitely a whirlwind. I probably still haven't had time to process it. Even though the game didn't go the way we wanted, sort of standing there at the end of the game, the fans still singing sort of 20 minutes after the final whistle was gone, and we're just looking at them. It was special.
You do come onto the pitch over in Prague. Obviously, it's an interesting sort of dynamic of a game where both teams are sort of thinking, we don't want to lose this, but we still want to win it.
It is like that. No one sort of wants to make a mistake, but everyone wants to be the hero. It's tough. It was really high pressure, but you know, I believe in myself, and it was a super proud moment. But yeah, it was scary, I'd say, yeah.
And as far as the penalty shootout goes, obviously we imagine Sammy Smodic would have been one of those who was going to step up and take a penalty. When you're coming on, are you thinking there's a chance that I'm going to be in the first five here, or what's the conversation like there with the manager? How does that come about?
Yeah, definitely. He asked me when he was doing the sort of lineups, do you want to take one? I said yes. I think I was sixth maybe, so I was probably next up. He probably went for the more experienced guys first. But yeah, it was nervous. I thought sort of, I think maybe I made one block in the game, so my second touch for Ireland would have been a penalty in the biggest game in the last 10 years.
Yeah, so how much you would have given to have even gotten to the point where Abbeville would have been taking a penalty? As you can see on your screens, I'm joined by a man who's very close to his camera. Ben Symes, how are you?
Well, listen, you don't really have much of a choice. Currently sitting in Hamburg Airport. Sun is shining, and they haven't let me into my gate, so I just had to pitch up wherever's possible. No, yeah, they've like closed off the entrance. It's a bit weird. I don't really know what's going on. There's a big red button, and I'm kind of afraid to press it.
Yeah, so you're afraid to press it. We'll come back to the Harvey Vale stuff in a couple of minutes. I think as we have Ben here for the next little while, we should switch our focus to the game that was on last night. Ben, you were on commentary duties over in Gdansk for Ireland's victory over Poland. How was that as an experience for yourself, first off, and any major takeaways from the game itself? A hard fought victory.
Yeah, huge victory, really. All the talk from the Polish camp before that game was they're going to take 6 points from these two games. So to go into their backyard and beat them, it was brilliant. Poland moved to Gdansk. The FA signed a deal with City of Gdansk in 2024 to have all the women's games in Gdansk. And since then, there are 9 games there, 7 wins, 2 draws. Both draws came against the Netherlands. So Poland were beaten there in over what space of 2.5 years. So it's an absolute huge win for Carl Ward's team. Obviously the performances against the Netherlands and France were excellent. It's a different type of game where maybe there was an onus on Ireland to come out a little bit more last night and not sit in, and you're defending against a class team. So just a huge win and a real momentum shifter now as well. The Netherlands beat France last night, so the group is now absolutely blown wide open, and Ireland have a huge chance now to get up to 6 points on Saturday against Poland at home.
Yeah, just on that, Ben, there's a huge opportunity, like you said there, to go and make it 6-6 in these two games against Poland. Back at the Aviva Stadium on Saturday, do you expect Carla Ward to make any changes? I just have to say, I thought Emily Murphy was absolutely outstanding.
Not for the first time.
Like, what a find she's been. She's turned into a hell of a player.
Yeah, I wouldn't have probably guessed that it would have been an Abby Larkin and Emily Murphy front two. I know Cara Caruso came down with an illness on the day of the game in Poland, so that's why she didn't play. But after seeing how good Emily Murphy and Abby Larkin were as a pair, I would be quite surprised to see that get changed. They were so, Emily Murphy in particular, like, this is 3 games now in this international window, in this international campaign, and 3 player of the matches. And her performance yesterday, not just the goal, but the willingness to run through the channels, to hold up the play. She won the penalty in the last couple of minutes. And what was probably most important, and I actually asked her it after the game, was Eva Pyor for Poland, who we know is literally a world-class talent, plays for Barcelona, 41 goals in 48 games for Barcelona, won the Gerd Müller Award in 2025 alongside Víctor Gyökeres for most goals in Europe. And Emily Murphy actually stopped her on the counter-attack three times during the course of the game and was the only player back there for Ireland. She was quite literally covered every blade of glass herself. And Denise O'Sullivan, I thought, were absolutely superb. And we know Denise O'Sullivan is world-class, but to see Emily Murphy kind of grow into the player that she's becoming now today, I think the move from Chelsea to Newcastle to get regular football has just benefited her so much. And that from pairing yesterday of Abby Larkin. And I think Abby Larkin not deserves special mention as well. I know Emily Murphy's going to get a lot of the plaudits, but Abby Larkin ran her socks to the ground last night, as did every player in an Ireland shirt. It's just brilliant. Ireland obviously got 2-0 up thanks to two great goals, Emily Murphy and Katie McCabe. And you're kind of getting flashbacks of Prague when the goal goes in just before half time. And we were all kind of sitting there going, oh my God, Eastern Europe, we're here again. It's going to happen again. 2-0 up and absolutely cruising. And we're going to throw it away. But the girls came out in the second half and didn't let Poland get a foothold on the ball at all. I've never seen, you know, if you didn't watch that game and you just looked at the scoreline 3-2, you'd say, oh, Ireland ground out a win away from home against a, you know, on paper, maybe away from home, a better opponent. But Ireland absolutely bossed this. Poland didn't get a sniff all game. And both their goals were completely against the run of play as well. So really, like, there's very, the only negatives you can take is that the two chances you afford them, they scored.
Yeah.
That's really the only negatives.
Yeah. Just like you mentioned there earlier about Poland moving to Gdansk and playing all their games there. What's the story with the pitch? Why was it so bad?
Look, that stadium is absolutely mind-boggling to me, because you walk up to it and it's superb. And I was maybe getting slight PTSD from Euro 2012 when I was walking up to it when Ireland got absolutely trounced 4-0 by Spain. And that same, if you remember. But then you go inside and it's like, for a stadium that, you know, was basically built for an international tournament, some of the facilities are like there was no media room. And then there's basically only a press conference room, which I thought it's bizarre for a UEFA Category 4 stadium to not have that. And then, look, we'd heard about the pitch before it and they said they weren't going to water it. It's been kind of let get into a terrible state. I'm not really sure how Lecky Gdansk play their games there, because we walked out and looked down at it and, oh my God. I pressed Adrian on cold comms with me last night. She was in the studio back in Dublin and she was kind of saying, oh, it looks pretty bad. Like, how bad is it actually out there? And I can promise you, we had a monitor up in front of us. It looked worse in the stadium than it did on TV. And they did water before the game as well, but it's to be honest, David, it's actually just not good enough. Like, it's not fit for purpose for an international stage.
Yeah.
And you're hosting teams like Ireland, the Netherlands and France there, and they're going to be there for at least another year. It's really not good enough. I don't know, is it something that UEFA or FIFA need to interject in and say either listen, get this ordered or move your games out of Gdansk, because it's appalling. It's absolutely appalling. Yeah. And I can promise you, if a men's international game was going to take place there, that pitch would have been sorted.
Yeah,
like, that's the thing. That's the conversation that sort of always ends up cropping up when we talk about the women's national team. We talk about more regularly than
facilities,
all that sort of stuff than we should do. So it'll definitely be one to keep an eye on. Hopefully there's been a movement on it and hopefully that does get sorted out. Some brilliant performances all around, some great goals actually as well that you should go and check out. And you should also go and check out all the interviews Ben done with the Carla Ward, Marissa Shiva, Emily Murphy.
Yep.
Not missing anyone.
Yeah. No. Chloe Misaki will be on the way tomorrow, I think.
Okay, yeah. So keep an eye out for that stuff. We've got live commentary on Saturday.
Yeah, live commentary, Stephen Doyle, 3:00. Kickoff at the Aviva Stadium, Off the Ball Saturday, John Duggan in the host in the hot seat. And you can hear that on Off the Ball and News Talk and on the GoLed app. So another huge week of international football.
Yeah, and before Ben rudely interrupted our conversation about Harvey Vale, I say in jest, I was going to move on to something, boys. I've created a game, right? A game for us to play today. Right? This game is called How Much Do You Love Your Granny?
Worrying.
Yeah, right. It's not worrying. It's not concerning at all. But we have a good history of the grandparentage rule, and Harvey Vale is the latest one of these players to join up with the Republic of Ireland national team. So I have compiled a list of 8 of the more well-known players who are currently playing, who haven't been capped by the Republic of Ireland, but are eligible to play for Ireland. Now, of course, we always want our players to come through the League of Ireland, come through the academies, but that being said,
diaspora is important.
Diaspora is incredibly important. Yeah. Yes, and I encourage everyone to go and listen to Harvey Vail's chat yesterday. And his affinity to Ireland is as strong as any. I can assure you. By the way, he was talking. But what I'm going to do is here, right? I'm going to throw a player to you, David. I'm going to throw a player to you, Ben. I want you to give me a rating on a scale of 1 to 10 of how likely you think it is that we see said player in a Republic of Ireland shirt at any point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Sound good, Ben?
All good.
Okay. Come to you first, David, right?
Okay.
First player we've got is a man who scored against Arsenal.
I knew this is coming. I knew this is the one.
Alex Scott, Bournemouth midfielder.
Alex Scott. Well, I have seen images of him donning the green shirt.
A green shirt.
Was it a rugby one?
I think.
Is that worse than wearing an England shirt? I think I've said that before. It's not. But Alex Scott, like, yeah, he's been, I was looking at this last week, he's been in like literally every England underage team possible, like 15s, 16s, 19s, 21s, been in a senior squad. I would say out of 10, likeliness, 1.
Wow.
But, okay, you know, that doesn't mean you shouldn't stop believing and trying. And, like,
we've had players, Kieran Clarke captained the England under-21s, Harvey Vail captained the England under-19s.
Yeah, I know, but this fella is a really top, top player.
Like, I agree.
England are all over him, and they would be sick if they let this this young midfielder go to another country. Like, I'm just looking at one of his former teammates, Antoine Semenyo. Bet you England are pretty fuming that he's going to go and play for Ghana in the World Cup. So I don't know what you think about that, Ben.
Yeah, look, I'd be quite shocked if Alex Scott ended up playing for Ireland. I'd be quite shocked if Alex Scott hasn't put his name in contention to be in the England squad this summer.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I think he is a player that England actually would benefit from quite a lot. I would, of the two Premier League players who are being touted, I can imagine the other one's going to come up. I can imagine the other one's going to come up. I'd say he's the less likely of the two.
Okay, well, seeing as we've gotten this far now, bear in mind, lads, right, we've got 8 players to get through. We can't be going in detail on every single one of these, right?
But go on.
I've given you Alex Scott. I've given you Liam Delap, Ben. You've already alluded to him. What do you reckon? Out of 10?
I don't know how much he loves his granny. I hope he loves his dad, and he remembers that he played for Ireland quite a lot. What I would say about Liam Delap is, as I said, he's the more likely out of the pair. And Hamer does want him and is actively kind of trying to recruit him. But the only thing is, like, Liam Delap would be saying to himself, you know, I'm wary of talking to this like it's some sort of transfer negotiation, but Liam Delap would be saying to himself, I'm at Chelsea Football Club. Yeah. If I get a handful of games under my belt and I score a couple of goals, there is no England striker under the age of 29, basically, that looks threatening to Harry Kane. Ollie Watkins is the only other one, really. Danny Welbeck as well, well into his 30s. You know, then where you go from there, Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Like, I think Liam Delap is going to be one who will hang out for England, to be honest. I can't see him going.
What's your rating?
Oh, I'd give it a 4 in all likelihood. And the 4 is he makes it to 26, 27, 28 years of age, hasn't played for England, and he tries to declare for Ireland then. I just can't see Liam Delap while he's at Chelsea, when he's at a so-called top six club, saying, yeah, I'll go play for Ireland, when that England carrot is kind of being dangled in front of him. And we know he's played for them at all levels of underage football as well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, unless something drastic happens and he maybe moves away from Chelsea, I can't see that one happen.
Okay. That's 2 that were on the lower side of likelihood based off of your ratings. Now, I should obviously just flag as well that these players aren't all eligible directly through their granny. That was just it tends to be called the granny rule.
Yeah.
Another man who I'm not actually sure what his Irish links are, but he is eligible to play for Ireland. And that's Joe Bellingham.
Joe Bellingham.
Borussia Dortmund midfielder.
Throwing this at me.
This is you, David Wilson. It's all
one.
You.
One. Yeah, okay. Not a chance.
No point talking
not
about
a
it,
chance.
No,
like, from... And I understand this. Jude Bellingham, his brother, obviously played for England. But I think that those two lads have quite a high opinion of themselves. And rightly so. They're very good players. It's, especially Jude, obviously. They're probably playing a Champions League quarterfinal tonight. So I can't see this happening at all.
Okay.
But that shouldn't, you know, you shouldn't like not do that for the, you know, for the one to try. And like,
ask
you should definitely ask and have a go. But I'd say 1 out of 10.
What do you reckon, Ben? Agreement?
Yeah, I'd say it's very unlikely. It's Mark, who's Jude and Job's father. Both his parents are Irish.
So
I don't know where in Ireland they're from, actually. I just know they're both Irish. Mm-hmm. But it's another one I can just see hanging out for England.
Yeah.
And the fact that his brother is already a star for England and playing for Madrid, I just can't see it happen, unfortunately. Yeah.
Okay, cool. I've got one more that is in the very low tier here, and then we go on to some of the more realistic ones. We've got Kieran Dewsbury-Hall, who has said he doesn't want to play for Ireland, but is there a world in which maybe in 4 years' time when we're qualifying for a World Cup, he decides, you know what, I haven't played for England. I'll jump over.
Then I don't want them, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
If you have come out and said, I do not want to play for Ireland, I want to play for England, good luck to you.
So where is he on the scale?
2.
Where do you have him on the scale?
One.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think any of these lads.
Okay, I'll give you one then that is more likely than the rest, okay? Coventry City defender Liam Kitching, left-footed, centre-half, just been promoted to the Premier League, 26 years of age, has been a stalwart for them over the last couple of years as they've risen up through the ranks in the EFL. Is he someone that should be on our radar?
For sure. Left-footed centre-half, sir. Few and far between, and talk to anyone that watches or studies Dutch football, left-footed centre-halves are like key to the way they play their kind of total football style system. I do think he is eligible for another country though, isn't he? I think he's eligible, not just for England, but I think there's another country he's eligible for. So it's definitely more likely. I don't know whether he gets on. And as well, centre-back's not a position that we're kind of desperate need of. Pity he wasn't a holding midfielder.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. Ben, we know you're a man for the continent. Paul Nebel.
I'm in his home country at the moment. In Hamburg. Look, this is a funny one where if you put up a good season in the Bundesliga, you're always kind of on the cusp of being called up to a German national squad. But I think that is a lot more likely than some of the lads who are playing in England. I think you wouldn't have to wait as long as we would have to wait for St. Alex Goff or Liam Delap to declare for us. I give that a 5. I think I that is a lot more likely to happen. 5 or 6.
Okay.
That's a lot more likely to happen. My only worry is, I think he has been called up to a German squad before.
He has been.
He didn't get it wrong. But he didn't end up playing. But look, that's happened with plenty of players before. There's no reason why it can't happen again.
He has spoken about it as well.
Yeah, he has, yeah.
His maternal grandmother is from Galway in Ireland. So
that'll be fun. It'd be interesting. It'd be something a bit different. We don't usually get that.
Yeah.
We usually get some English guys, you know.
Some English guys. You can't say they're English, Ben.
Some English guys.
Yeah, but
once they declare they're Irish.
Yeah, no, I know that, but you know what
I mean. There was one thing I just thought about.
They come from England to Ireland.
There's something about Liam Delap that I just thought about. It was quite interesting to hear Liam Senior was asked last week, is he ready for international football? And he wasn't asked what country. And Liam Senior just said, Liam is ready for international football, whether it's England or the Republic of Ireland.
Yeah,
And he wasn't asked about it. So that's maybe an interesting... Look, it could be nothing. It could be Liam Senior with his usual LinkedIn...
That shows how much media Liam Senior is consuming.
I've seen his name pop up on the Off the Ball breakfast feed.
Who, Liam Senior?
Yeah. That's a joke, by the way.
All right. Okay, sorry.
You never know. There could be some sort of different alias.
Right, resident Man United fan. Shay Lacey. Very well touted in the Man United Academy. He's got some Irish roots.
Yeah, he does.
It's hard to know. He's obviously so young.
He kind of obviously got into the team under kind of at the end of the Amorim era, and then in the Darren Fletcher era, it looked like he was going to become some important kind of a player towards the end of the season. And then he was out of the team, and now he's kind of he's back in a squad there on Monday against Leeds. I think he had a bit of an injury, but the question is, like, when do you get these lads in? Like, do you try and get them into a 21 squad? Like, there's such a... Because England qualify for the European under-21s, and that's, like, the elite level of underage football. They always qualify for the under-21 European Championships, and then, you know, they've won the last two, I think, as well. That's just such a... They've got such a hold on it. And like, maybe 20 years ago, let's say, the English FA were quite bad at, like, getting...
Yeah.
Their diasporic players play for them. So I think it's just so hard to compete with that 21s team. So I'd imagine he's probably going to get into that. Because like the England under 21s team is littered with like Premier League footballers and Premier League stars.
Yeah.
So I'd say maybe 3 or 4 out of 10.
Yeah, and again, it is all with the younger guys, it's more difficult to see how their careers develop. I know we say we only want lads who want to play for Ireland, and don't just see it as a fall back on that, obviously, which is a natural feeling to have, but it's harder to get a gauge of that when they are that bit younger and haven't played all that much first team football. Ben, the final one of this very incredibly fun first edition of How Much Do You Love Your Granny is a former England under 21 international, CJ Egan Riley, who is currently at Marseille, formerly of Manchester City and Burnley. He's in and out of the team in Marseille, a few little injuries. What do you reckon?
It's funny, I had a feeling that was going to be the last one, ex-Manchester City and Burnley. I think that one is quite likely.
You think, yeah?
I'd give that more like 7-8 kind of category.
It's a lot.
You have to factor in the caveat of, does he want to play for Ireland?
Yeah, because we don't know.
Look, I know he played briefly for Ireland underage.
Under 16s, yeah.
And then switched back. But like Kieran Disbury Hall is someone who, look, it doesn't look like he's going to get an England squad at the moment. I actually think he probably is good enough. But it doesn't look like he's going to. But he still doesn't want to play for Ireland. So it kind of all comes down to that. I don't think CJ and Riley, barring, you know, a crazy change in the middle of his career, is going to end up being of that calibre to play for England. So I would say if he wants to play for Ireland, I would say that one is a lot more likely. I'd give that a 7 or an 8.
Yeah.
You agree?
I guess so. Like, this definitely could happen, but the fact that he's already played for Ireland, like do players like let's say Michael Keane, for example, like I don't know how many senior caps he's got for England, but does he regret not like maybe nailing his colours to the mast maybe for Ireland a bit earlier on, and like he would have had an international career, and like, okay, he's had a solid Premier League career and he's done all right, like, but does he regret that? Maybe he probably does. And it's
again, though, not to be pedantic, it comes back to the same point as to whether or not he actually wanted or wants to play for Ireland, you know.
Then you can always be convinced of these things, or you don't have to be convinced. Like I think, like the issue of where you feel, where you're from, or who you want to represent is quite a complex one. And
but just as far as the regret goes,
yeah,
it's like I could see a world where he doesn't have any regret because he hasn't explored that. You know,
yeah, true. And I think, yeah, there definitely has been players in the past, I just can't think of them on the top of my head, who maybe regret not declaring for Ireland and playing for Ireland.
Absolutely, yeah.
But it's a complex thing, and to decide this when you're 15, 16, all the way to 21, 22, like, it is quite a difficult position to be put in. I know he who shall not be named, Declan Rice, like, he done the three caps and then went and played for England. That was horrific. Like, that was one of the worst things I've seen ever in international football. But I do have some sort of, remorse from, as in, like, it's a difficult situation to be put in. Like, where do you feel where you're from? Like, some people don't feel that passionately or that patriotic about any country, no matter where they're from. You know, like me personally, I was born in Scotland, grew up in England for a while, but I knew, and I remember Kevin Kilbane talking about this in the show, like when he was growing up in Preston, like the first thing you did was you watch the Irish football team. And my earliest memories of living in Darlington were watching the Irish football team. So there was never any question, okay, I was never going to be good enough, but I was always thinking, I always had that connection to Ireland. Like some lads don't, like Harry Kane could have played for Ireland. Jude Bellingham obviously could have played for Ireland. Harry Maguire could have played for Ireland. It's quite a complex thing to think about.
James Maddison. It absolutely is. It absolutely is. That's an interesting little anecdotal kind of thing as well.
Yeah. I remember the day that England beat Germany, or England drew Greece. And it was around a similar time when Jason McAteer scored that goal against Holland. And I was like, this is the biggest and best thing ever.
Yeah.
But then I remember going to like school and like people are on about, oh, David Beckham's free kick for Greece or against Greece. And I was like, don't really care about that. Like,
yeah.
You know,
it's mad.
Yeah.
It's funny, like, I completely agree with you. It's such a complex topic, and it's really tough for a kid to have to, like, nail his colours to the mast. And especially, you say, one who grew up in England with English mates, but they've got Irish roots. And I always think of, like, the Jack Grealish example of, growing up in Solihull and playing Gaelic football growing up, and growing up in a completely Irish family, like, even Grealish is a name. Like, but then he's gone to school surrounded by English mates. Now, look, they weren't all English. Like, he went to school with Aoife Mannion. A similar situation, who played for England all on race level and then ended up declaring for Ireland when she got to senior level. So, you know, to ask a kid of 16, 17, 18 years of age to say, what nationality do you feel? I think people of dual nationalities will know that, you know, you could be aged 30 or older and you still aren't really sure what your main nationality is or where you feel your allegiance lies with. So to ask a kid and to kind of criticise a kid and lay it on them for it is really hard to do, except for the Declan Rice case. Playing three times for a senior team.
Yeah, and then decide to go with you and Irish lads.
That's a different story now, lads.
Before we move on, I like just the Grealish one. Grealish had played for England underage.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I think he had suffered like... not like a panic attack, but like something like that, and didn't go and play for England for a while. And then he was in a Villa team where he was with like Samer Carruthers, Callum Robinson, I think it was like five or six Irish lads, and he was like good mates with them all. And they're like, "Oh, you've got Irish ancestry, like come play for us." And he came and played for Ireland, and all the underage teams, from what I've heard, that he was delighted to come play for Ireland, had a really good, enjoyable experience. And then at 19 got his head turned by England. So
yeah,
it happens.
No, for sure. And it's definitely a topic that's always going to be, with the nature of our history,
yeah,
it's always going to be something that we talk about, and it's always going to be something that evolves, and the longer time goes on, mm-hmm, the more kind of differing, yeah, people's kind of feelings towards it are going to be, you know.
And if you look at some of the underage squads, there's lads playing in Spain, and Selma Garcia McNulty playing in the Netherlands, grew up in Spain. Like, there's going to be even more, yeah, you know, European, and maybe even, like, we had there's a guy playing in Argentina called Patricio Schroeder,
yeah,
who has Derry heritage, and yeah, he's been for their under 18s and 19s, and hopefully we get to chat to him on this at some stage.
Absolutely,
well,
yeah,
over the next few weeks.
Aaron Ochoa's tearing it up for Malaga at the moment.
Yeah, like it's a cool, interesting, and kind of exciting time, but you know, the world is complex, and
absolutely. And my little game here of how much you love your granny has dissolved into a 20-minute chat that's supposed to be about 5 minutes. But
there you go.
Yeah, no, it was good, right? But we should move on. There's been loads going on. There, like, we're talking here as if there's nothing really happening, you know, outside of the national team and all that sort of stuff. But last night, and over the course of the weekend, Ryan Manning, Finn Azaz, the form kept up. Azaz is injured at the moment, so he wasn't playing last night, but they were at the heart of a huge comeback win for Southampton against Derby in the weekend, and a comfortable win against Blackburn last night. Azaz, as I said, is out injured. Ryan Manning scored a goal last night, slightly fortuitous, but a screamer to others.
Make your own luck.
He'll take it. Yeah, well, that's true, yeah. Very quickly on Southampton, I have a couple of other stories to go through. Do you reckon they're going to go up? They're on an outrageous run of form here. They're about 18 games unbeaten. They've got some massive fixtures still. I think they play Ipswich, the penultimate game of the season.
Yeah.
There's currently, I think, a point or two between them. Ipswich will come on to lost last night.
Yeah.
And Southampton are absolutely the form team. And there's always one team that picks up a load of form heading into the playoffs, and it seems as though it's them at the minute.
That's your kind of your argument, isn't it? Like, there's always one team that, especially in the championship, that goes on this mega run where they look unstoppable and they just time it to perfection. They're all playing with, the whole team is playing with bags of confidence, and the two Irish lads in Finn Azaz and Ryan Manning are kind of central to this. So you'd have to back them to go up, because like Middlesbrough are falling off a cliff. Ipswich are, you know, still up and down. Coventry are obviously going to go up. But yeah, I think whether Southampton get up or not, I think Finn Azaz will probably be a Premier League footballer next year. Ryan Manning depends on whether Southampton get up. I'm not sure what your thoughts on that are, Ben.
I think a lot of it depends on if Southampton do get up. I do think Finn Azaz is probably capable of a move. But you know, you're kind of going, where do you go and who signs him? Is it going to be a promoted team? Is it going to be, I know Crystal Palace were linked in the past. I'd be interested to see. Ryan Manning is one who I agree with you. I think it probably depends at this stage of his career if Southampton get up or not. And obviously that remains to be seen.
Well, Ben, I've heard some news that you've enjoyed my game so much that you have to go and celebrate and jump on your plane and head back to Ireland. So we'll let you go and we'll chat to you when you're back.
Yeah, someone pressed the big red button. Someone took the jump, so the gate's now open. Yeah. Lads, take care.
Yeah, safe flying, Ben.
See you, Ben. And on that topic of players going up, potentially getting moves, playing in the Premier League, we had Ipswich last night, a bit of a shock defeat to Portsmouth, who were... Connor Shockensey on the score sheet for Portsmouth last night. Millie Alley got man of the match.
Yeah.
They had another good win the weekend against Borough. They won that game 1-0, 97-minute winner. So they're climbing their way out of the relegation zone in a battle where nobody seems to want to win. But Darragh O'Shea at the weekend for Ipswich was monstrous. He got man of the match. He's been pretty excellent for them this season. I think we're all pretty happy to think that he's one of these players that could make the step up to playing in the Premier League. I know every time he's been there, he's gotten relegated. But like hopefully he doesn't become a Dwight Gayle type character who's too good for the championship and not good enough for the
Premier League.
Yeah,
I don't know. I think there's definitely teams that would.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's different when you're a centre half and a striker. But just from a Republic of Ireland perspective, obviously Ipswich is one of these clubs that we've got an awful lot of players at. Jack Taylor is playing regularly for them. Sammy Smolik is still on the books. Darragh O'Shea is there. Tiog Benne is still on the books. And Casey McAteer, of course, is in and out of the team a little bit. If Ipswich were to get promoted, and be better set now this time heading into the Premier League than maybe they were last time. Maybe it happened a year or two too soon. Is that a positive for us in that a lot of these guys will probably be shifted to the side and become bit part players? Considering Jack Taylor's played an awful lot, Darragh O'Shea will remain a mainstay, I would imagine. But the likes of Casey McAteer is probably not going to get a look in. Jack Taylor probably becomes a bit part player. Chiwag Bene, Sammy Smonix, they're probably looking for moves anyway.
Yeah. It's interesting. Like Jack Taylor is still at an age where he can develop into like a probably a Premier League midfielder. I don't know if he has the exact kind of level that he probably needs to be at to be a decent Premier League midfielder at the minute. But like, look at Josh Cullen. It took him a couple of years to kind of develop into that player. And at the start of the season, he was excellent for Burnley, and Burnley were going quite well. And then he gets the bad injury, unfortunately, and then Burnley's form fell off a cliff. And then they're condemned to relegation now for a number of weeks. So all in all, it'd be definitely a positive thing for Irish football if we had that many players in a Premier League squad. I think when it would come to maybe September time, I'd say it could be three maybe at the most.
Yeah.
But it all depends as well. Like, is Kieran McKenna a Fermanagh man? Is he going to stay around as well? Because
linked with the Bournemouth job.
Linked with Bournemouth. Obviously Palace. Linked with Celtic as well. Yeah. And Palace. Yeah, I don't know. It's an exciting time as well for young Irish managers too.
It really is. Really is, yeah. And hopefully Conor Howran gets a bit of more backing next in the summer for Barnsley, obviously in League One. We are going to come on to Brentford in just a moment. A couple of more little things to wrap up from the EFL. I obviously mentioned Millie Alley and Conor Shocknessy already. Brian Barry Murphy is another young manager, of course, I suppose he's not actually that young. He's in his late 40s, but he's young in the game, I suppose. Yeah. And he's still really experienced. But experienced a lot of different... He's a different type of experience, I suppose, than managing at loads of different clubs.
He's really interesting as well.
Yeah. And he's a fascinating listen to. We've had him on across all the shows, I think, over the course of the last couple of years. But they're edging their way back towards Championship football. They're sort of, I wouldn't say stumbling over the line, big win over Bolton at the weekend and a late draw last night against Huddersfield. So I think they're probably one win away from getting back to the Championship at the first time of asking. Brian Murphy, obviously, in his first season there, and he seems to be pretty well liked by the Cardiff fans. And then a little while ago, we had some of the nominations for the players of the season. We should just mention this. We obviously spoke about Jack Moylan at length last week. He's been nominated for League One Player of the Season, despite the fact he hasn't actually played all that many games due to the injury. 25 games. I think he's 10 or 11 goals, scored a worldly actually at the weekend as well, after they'd already secured promotion. Brian Barry Murphy himself has been nominated for League One Manager of the Season. Then Aaron Drinan, friend of the past Green Scene in its original form on Off the Ball Breakfast, had been on with us after scoring a hat-trick in the FA Cup. So that's pretty much everything that's going on in the EFL, although we do have players playing elsewhere. Keith Andrews is obviously a manager. He's not a player, but he's doing pretty well with Brentford. They had a 2-2 draw with Everton at the weekend. Cuevan Kelleher was phenomenal. I saw the compilation going around of all the saves himself and Jordan Pickford had made. Draw that probably helps no one.
Yeah, that's been their problem recently.
And what I want to ask is whether Brentford are going to get European football, and if so, which competition are they going to end up in? I've got the run in here. I'll run it through it for. I'll let you think about that while I run through for the people. Their next game is Fulham at home. Obviously did a disastrous result against them early on in the season away from home. Nathan Collins wasn't at his best. They then have Man United away, who they picked up a good result against earlier on in the season. They then play West Ham at home, followed by Manchester City away, then Crystal Palace at home, and they finish the season away at Anfield.
It's a tough run-in.
It is.
It's a tough run-in that might suit Keith Andrews though, and this Brentford team.
Yeah,
like
I'm looking at there going right. Sorry, like you're at home against the three sort of lesser teams of the bunch: mm-hmm. Fulham, West Ham, and Crystal Palace. I think going away to City, United, and Liverpool, they'll set up well. They'll be tough to break down. They'll be tough to beat. I would actually fancy them almost to pick up as many points against United, City, and Liverpool as I would against Fulham, West Ham and Palace.
Yeah. See, yeah, like they're going to be fine for their... West Ham are going to be fine for their lives in that game. That's a tough game. Like, for example, this weekend, Brentford played Fulham at 12:30. Fulham had a pretty stinking result last week against a poor Liverpool team that were out of form. And they rarely put two bad performances back to back. Marco Silva looks like this is the end for him at Fulham. He's going to maybe leave at the end of the season and not sign a new contract. Fulham are in that position where you're like, are they on the beach or are they not? Like, I think they've got aspirations of qualifying for Europe themselves.
Well, yeah, and on that, Fulham are currently 12th. Yeah. Brentford are currently 7th.
Yeah.
And there's 3 points between them.
Yeah. And it's a West London derby too, isn't it? Kind of. It is a West London derby. Yeah. Then they have United on a Monday night after that as well. Like, this Manchester United team are still all over the place, really. Yeah, like, after the initial good start on Michael Carrick, you could easily see Brentford going to win that game. West Ham game is a really tough game, because just because West Ham need to pick up points,
yeah,
you'd imagine City are going for the title. That'll be a really tough game. And then they've got Palace at home, where Palace might have their thoughts on maybe a European final for the club.
Yeah, I think that was where they would be hoping at this point in time that's where they'll be. Yeah,
and then Liverpool away in the last game of the season, which could be Arne Slot's last game. Who knows what that is? Liverpool are probably trying to win that game to get into a Champions League spot. So not easy, but the draws, that game against Everton last week. Yeah, Kelleher was absolutely brilliant. Collins actually was pretty good too. The only issue, there was one where they both hesitated as they're both about to clear the ball from the 6 yard box and they nearly let it go in. So there was that kind of a bit of a mix up. But other than that, like, I actually thought Collins played pretty okay. It's been an unbelievable season for Brentford. And if they could get in to a European position, it would be absolutely brilliant and a great story for Irish football. Kelleher, Collins and Andrews and Stephen Rice there in the backroom staff as well. It's a hell of a year for them. But
because I remember, like, obviously following Wigan, Brentford were always one of these teams that I would be coming across on a week to week basis. And I actually remember them going up the day they went up from League One on Sky Sports many a moon ago, watching Gillette Soccer Saturday or whatever it was at the time, and the celebrations on the pitch at Griffin Park, and from where they have come from to where they are now, and the players and the managers and everyone in between that's come through the door there. It's pretty remarkable what they've managed to build there. And on Keith Andrews, it's amazing. It really is. His first managerial job, like.
Yeah.
I mean, I know we say that, but I don't think we actually think about that. This is his first proper.
If he gets them into Europe, is he the Premier League manager of the year?
I would say so, especially if...
it always goes to the Premier League winner, though, doesn't it?
It does, yeah, but that's just one of those things, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's just one of those things. I suppose, especially if Arsenal managed to throw the league away, I wouldn't be giving it to Pep, do you know? I can see why Arteta would get it if they went and won the league comfortably at this stage, but I don't think that's going to happen. Anyway, that's a story for a different podcast. We're going to finish up on the star boy of Irish football, Troy Parrott.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's fair to call him that. He scored again at the weekend. They're playing
such a lovely goal.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Like, I will say, suspect defending.
Yeah,
but you can say that for a lot of things. Yeah, true. Yeah. It was a good goal. They're playing in Europe tomorrow.
Yeah, they've got a 3-goal deficit to overcome against Shakhtar Donetsk.
They're a good side, Shakhtar.
Yeah, I had the fortune to go out and watch them against the Shamrock Rovers in a horrific night out in Tala before Christmas. But I tell you what, I enjoyed seeing some of them Brazilian talents on show. And it was actually a really nice night. There's a lot of, obviously, Ukrainians here in Ireland who are... Shakhtar have become this team of the nation now, really, of Ukraine. So... they had some unbelievable wingers, brilliant striker. They look like they could be on their way to a European final. And Shakhtar, traditionally, obviously, we associate them with, you know, qualifying for the last 16 of a Champions League or the last 8 of a Champions League. They've kind of dropped down the tiers for this tournament, and this is where you can get the benefit of the Conference League. So they're going to struggle to come back from a 3-goal deficit, but the big one for Parrott is the Dutch Cup final on Sunday, and
5 o'clock Sunday, Nijmegen.
Yeah, and it's Nijmegen who have played this really interesting style of football where let's say the centre back gets the ball, he plays out to his right back, right? And generally the centre back holds the position and, like, offers, you know, for an angle for to give the ball back to him. That doesn't happen with NSA. Anyone who passes the ball runs forward immediately. So they just have this, like, hugely attacking team.
Proper Dutch stuff, like.
I don't even know if it's even Dutch, but, like, they just run and go. And, like, they just play, like, incredibly attacking football, but leaves them very suspect at the back. If you go and look at their Eredivisie table, they've scored a load of goals and they've also conceded a load of goals because, like, their centre back ends up as a right winger. The right winger ends up as a centre midfielder. The centre midfielder ends up as the left winger. It's this mad attacking style of football that maybe Troy Parrott benefits from the other way.
Just doing some very quick scoreboard journalism here, a couple of fixtures, a couple of results from Nijmegen during the season. There's 3-2 win, a 2-all draw, a 4-3 win, a 4-1 win, a 3-2 loss, a 3-2 win against PSV in the last round in the semi-finals. I think it's over. Is there over two legs or is it one-legged affair?
One-legged affair.
And then they beat them 3-2 again in the league a week or so later.
And PSV won that title by like 20 points there last weekend.
And Nijmegen aren't necessarily a household name in football, let alone really Dutch football. But
no.
They're third in the league.
Yeah.
They're pretty well clear, 6 or 7 points, I think, ahead of AZ Alkmaar.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be a walk in the park.
No, and like Tripart has to kind of conquer his own demons. He missed a penalty in the cup final last year against Go Ahead Eagles. Go Ahead Eagles obviously then went into the Europa Conference League as well and actually beat Aston Villa this season.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
So,
that was a great game, great stadium.
So, it's back at the Kuip in Rotterdam on Sunday. I'm not sure if it's on Premier Sports. It's on somewhere and Irish people will be getting to watch it by any kind of hook or crook, I suppose.
Don't you ask the pub to put it on? Your local on Sunday evening.
Yeah, you'll find it somewhere. But I suppose the next thing for Parrott is, like, if he wins a cup final, which would be great for him, great for AZ, to haven't won that many trophies in their history, qualifies them for Europe next year. They still have a really good chance of qualifying for Europe anyway. And then he probably departs as a well-loved and, you know, well-liked figure of AZ Alkmaar, and he probably goes to pastures new. Where those pastures are, I don't know.
We could nearly dedicate a whole episode into
where does Troy Parrott go?
Where does Troy Parrott go? Yeah, where we think he should go and where we think he'll end up.
Yeah, we might find out a bit more over the next few weeks.
Yeah, we might do. Keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
So that's all we've time for this week. I don't actually think I mentioned Cadbury earlier on, so I will mention them now. Yeah. As always, the green scene on Off the Ball is with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland national football teams. And I will repeat it, as always. The green scene on Off the Ball is with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland national teams.
The green scene on Off the Ball with Cadbury, a proud sponsor of the Republic of Ireland football teams.